You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Tonight, we're welcoming a visionary strategist whose playbook transforms creative passion into profitable brands. Eddie Fwamba is not just a brand communication strategist. He's a creative entrepreneur's secret weapon with over a decade of experience across marketing, sponsorship, and sports industries. Armed with a BSc in finance from WITS, my alumni, Eddie has helped brands from grassroots DJs to global stadiums tell stories that connect hearts and open wallets, which is very important. He's driven fan engagement as hero sports and entertainment, led major sponsorship strategies, and architected brand narratives that don't just attract attention, but build economies. Tonight isn't about platitudes. Please miss me with that. We're giving you actionable insights on how creatives can shift from hustle survivor to entrepreneur best in class, crafting undeniable brands, locking in loyal audiences, and commanding real revenue. Whether you're making music, content, design, or performance, this conversation is your roadmap to turning creative fire into sustained financial freedom. Eddie, welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thank you for having me, Pumice. Thank you.
All right. So as a creative who's also an academic, I'm always so concerned for my brothers and sisters who, you know, chase their passion and really want to do the thing that speaks to their hearts and sets their soul on fire. But then later down the pipe, they become these starving artists. And then when they die, everybody in the country needs to band together to feel sorry, and they don't know how to bury them. And with this conversation, I really want to make sure that people can turn their passion to profits and really know how to be able to live the lives they want to live, but also not be a burden to themselves and to others, even after they've died. So that's the conversation you and I are having.
Perfect.
All right. So I want to first start knowing from you, where does the mindset shift begin? And I'm asking about the mindset shift from turning creative passion into actual sustainable business. What tripwire helps spark that change?
It's actually funny you should say this. Heroes has been, on paper, CIPC has known of over 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels like this year I am really making a big shift from self-employment into actual business.
Okay.
And I actually had a conversation with, I'm actually very fortunate that not all of my clients are sports industry clients. Mm-hmm. And one in particular client is a consulting firm who consults in the manufacturing and mining space.
Yeah.
And they consult big mines and big businesses like the Twin Savers and the Beers of this world in how to be operationally efficient.
Yeah.
And so I asked the question, when did you guys move from self-employment into a business?
Mm.
And they said, as soon as they had a reliable and repeatable process of doing the work.
Ooh.
Not just making the money, but doing the work.
Yes.
Now, for me, as I got into the marketing space, like you said, I got a finance degree, and so I decided to, instead of sitting down with my mom, my father passed away when I was very young.
Oh, sorry about that.
All good. And trying to convince her that I've just finished my finance degree and now I want to do marketing, trying to convince her to pay for an additional degree.
What do you mean?
Exactly. I think that was my first taste of dealing with a shareholder.
Yeah.
I decided to work in the marketing space.
Mm.
And I never done marketing at school. I never picked up a marketing book, but I discovered in my final year there was this thing, marketing.
Okay.
And so I went and I decided to work. And luckily for me, I also had friends who were in the space.
Mm.
So they got me into jobs and companies. And I went in there trying to learn the skills from the ground up on the job type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And later discovered that I really liked strategy.
Yeah.
And so, and that's how I position myself as a strategist. But I never put down on paper my process on doing strategy. It was always in my head.
Of course.
Yeah, so you just run with it. And that's, you know, as creatives, we've got our process. We just got a feel for these things and all of that stuff. But as soon as you put it on paper, as soon as you put it on paper and you see the system, you see the way you can look at it, you can study it, you can perfect it, you can tweak it, you can analyze it, and you know at any given time they can wake you up in the middle of the night, you know your process.
Yeah.
Right? It's not just in your head. And then from a business perspective, you can bring someone and teach them your system.
Mm-hmm.
It's not it's now transferable because you've tested the system. It's reliable and it's repeatable.
Yeah.
And I think as soon as you get to that point, that's when you now start having a business. Because that is a business is a system, a process of generating value for your customer.
And I guess the beauty or the value of a system is that it allows you to repeat it repeats the activities, for lack of a better term. So what you're saying is, sure, have that, because a lot of creators also, a lot of what they do, like you said, is intuitive, right? I just see and I do. But you're saying a system is what can help move you from, hey, I'm an artist, to I actually run a brand. And that still doesn't kill the creativity. Because I think that's the other thing. You know, when you are left brain dominant, it's you think on systems, you think in processes, but right brain is your guts and all of those things. So you're saying we need to leverage some of the left brain tactics or ways of doing things to make sure that the creativity is sustainable.
Yes. And I think because one of the projects I'm getting involved in is in the AI space, and AI space specifically for the advertising and marketing space.
Yeah.
And we're finding a lot of resistance from creatives because they feel that their ways cannot be taught, it cannot be put down, right? And you can't just have a machine or whatever, a computerized intelligence dictate a creative process. And that's not really the case. The case is there is science and art, everything that we do.
Mm-hmm.
There is, you know, there are so many soccer players who play soccer.
Yeah.
But within that within that world of soccer players, there are artists in there. There are guys who bring such of their own personality, such intuitiveness to the game that it's both science and art when you're watching it.
Yeah.
So what, you know, when you're sitting down as a creative, it's just, what's my process of getting into a creative space, into an ideation? That's just what you're noting down.
Yeah.
You're not taking yourself out of it. You're not taking things, but you just step one. And even when especially in the agency space, the process is we get a brief from a client, a strategist identifies a perfect strategy and then gives a strategic platform to a creative to build on.
Yeah.
And you want a creative to recognize a good strategic platform to build on. You want him to recognize a good strategy.
Yeah.
And from that, he is able to extract the right things. If we give him a bad strategy or incomplete strategy, he's going to feel frustration in his early part of his idea. So it's, how do you, as a creative, what system have you put in place for you to recognize all the pitfalls? Because it removes all the anxiety and you get to just do what you love doing. You know, as a strategist, I love identifying the insight, the human truth, in terms of where the brand can play in. But that process requires me to do a little bit of research and to read.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reading is it's such a labor-intensive process, but I don't want to skip that process because in that reading, something will spark.
That's where the insight is.
Exactly. The scientific process is I have to do a research, but the artistic process that within that research, there is some human truth that has never been identified, and that's why it came to my brain.
Oh, right? I love this so much. Yeah.
So the system is just for you to know your process and remove the anxiety of what do I do next, right? And that it's not just, because I mean, with my client, when they're having the conversation, they said that once they had this system, they then knew which jobs not to take on because their mission was to build with every client. We build on what we know, and they got better at it because they had a system. They knew how to deliver the work, and they got better at it, and they became a field, right? There's a quote from, I think it was Bruce Lee, who says, "I do not fear the man who has practiced 10,000 kicks. I fear the man who has practiced one kick 10,000 times."
Right?
So imagine a person who's noted down as a process of, of doing the work, has perfected it 10,000 times. You can't beat that person.
You can never. Also, with the system, you know exactly at which point the problem is. So you could have a brilliant idea and you keep iterating, but it's just not producing the results you want. But with the system, you're able to pinpoint, this is where it's going wrong. It's not the idea. It's not even how I'm executing. There must be something in this whole process that isn't working. And the system allows you to have that visibility, which then takes away the anxiety.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, you started talking about brands and it got me so excited because I really want to know, what's the secret sauce behind translating creative identity into an actual marketable story?
Oh, I'll give you some examples, some experiences that I had. So for my sins, I spent some time in retail and okay. I worked for an interesting, exciting brand at the time. Yeah. I think they've gone through some hectic hardships now. I even know why they went through the hardship, but let me tell the story. So I worked for Akajo, which was under the Platinum Group. Mm. And Akajo, upon my arrival, I wanted to work in head office. And they said, no, you get to enjoy the brand more when you're in the store, which obviously meant that my weekends and public holidays were all gone.
Yeah.
But I used to sit in the Akajo store. And I think I did my training in the Sandton store, Mandela Square, which was still there. And on a Saturday, a random Saturday, it wasn't even like a public holiday or there was no major event, but the store was packed. And as a store manager, I used to get some sales records and I would be seeing how much the other stores were making. And at the time, Akajo business was good. And I'm seeing these numbers and I was perplexed because there was no advertising. There was no endorsement by celebrity endorsement, but yet the stores around the country were bumping.
Okay.
And I was like, how is this possible?
Yes.
And Akajo believed in what they called, or the Platinum Group believed in what they called retail theater. They put on a show, right? They put on a show, both the products, the combination of the product, the sales staff, as well as the store aesthetic, the way it looked, put on the show, told a story.
Mm.
And so the story of Akajo was that there was a guy named Joe, basically he was in Acapulco, and he didn't want to wear suits anymore. He just wanted to live the beach life. And he created a brand called Akajo. That was the story of Akajo. And a later iteration of that story was that, you know, for Akajo within the Platinum Group, Platinum Group had four other brands. And so each brand represented a personality.
Okay.
And Akajo's personality was jocks and cheerleaders. that identity was filtered through all the way through to the staff that were chosen. There were sporty staff. There were guys who were active and loud, and there were cheerleaders and jocks.
Yeah.
So when you walked into the Akajo store, that's the staff that you saw.
Mm.
There were good-looking people, intelligent people. They just loved active lifestyle.
Mm.
The colors of the clothing represented that. Now, the lifestyle in Acapulco on the beach is shorts and T-shirts.
For sure.
And Akajo took it further and made golf shirts, and became specialist in the golf shirts department. So you had cargo shorts, golf shirts. That was the lifestyle of Akajo. Mm-hmm. You had jocks and cheerleaders that represented and embodied the clothing, the spirit of the clothing. And then you had the music in store that represented this Acapulco lifestyle.
Yeah.
And then we even had a spray that you'd spray. It gave a scent of the store. So people love the scent in our Akajo store. Now, me as like I said, I always like the art and the science of it.
Yeah.
Every brand has got what I believe is an essence, a reason for being, right? A reason for existing.
Yeah.
Now, I'll give you some of the essence you see with some of the most popular brands. If you look at Nike's essence is innovation and inspiration, and especially inspiration. This is how the brand expresses itself. In fact, Nike's mission, I think after 2007, if I'm not mistaken, they changed their mission, and their mission is, we exist to bring innovation and inspiration to every athlete. And they put an asterisk by athlete because they define what an athlete is. An athlete prior to 2007 was a professional player, a professional person who played a sport.
Yeah.
But after 2007, they said an athlete is anybody that has a body. So the same person, it'll be a Muslim lady, who's anybody that's got an athlete, Nike believe that they're on the planet to bring innovation and inspiration to that person. And the communication, if you look at the communication, is always inspirational. They don't have to use the word inspiration. They just put a communication line that says, yesterday you said tomorrow.
Yeah.
So they always look to inspire people to move. And there was a video that I saw with Simon Sinek. He was talking about Phil Knight, the founder of Nike.
Mm.
And Phil was at a conference, and he asked everybody in the room, do you guys know who Nike is, what Nike stands for? And everybody gave their own views and says, Nike is that person. When you're running in, when you're training in the rain, we're that person sitting under the tree cheering you on.
Mm.
That's Nike, right? Mm. That's the essence of Nike. So Nike just pours out the innovation, inspiration.
Yeah.
Coca-Cola is joy.
Before you move to Coca-Cola, I'm thinking about Nike now, and even their logo is a tick. For me, that says it's done.
Yes, it's done.
If I were looking at a to-do list, the tick says I've done it.
It's complete.
Yeah, it's complete.
And the famous tagline, just do it. Inspiration.
Yeah.
Now, we are fortunate to live in this day and age where we can take the sum of Nike's history, right? But just believe that, just also just put in perspective that when they were doing all these elements, they were building on as they were going, you know, right? So in 2007, when they say inspiration, innovation, it's a sum of all of their work where they understood that, hey, this is what's coming out of us, right?
Yeah.
This is what where we win, right? And to be honest, Nike even defined a sports marketing industry, what sports marketing is about. It really is about inspiring, using the athlete to inspire everyday person.
Mm.
And every time an athlete or a football team or rugby team, any sports property signs with Nike, they're signing onto the inspiration marketing machine.
Sure.
Because they tell the story, and they're consistent about the story.
Yeah.
At the end of the story, have we inspired the audience? That's how Nike is.
Ooh.
So the selection of athletes is, can we build a story from this person that will inspire individual?
Yeah.
Michael Jordan, I never watched him play a live game, but I know who he is to the game of basketball and who he is to the game of, to the world of sports because of the stories Nike told with him.
Oh, right? Man.
Mm. Right? So there's an essence that the brand holds, and then it takes that essence and uses a vehicle to embody that essence. A vehicle to embody that essence and tell the story, right?
Mm.
Coca-Cola with their essence, which is being joy, right? Every bottle of Coke represents joy. That's why if you look at the visual communication, people must be smiling.
Yeah.
Even if the bottle of Coke is not there, or they're red in the imagery and people are smiling. But Coke says, we joy in a can, joy in a bottle. This liquid concoction that you created, joy in the bottle, right? And they tell this joy story.
Yeah.
So even in their sponsorship, in their communication, joy must come out. The person must feel joy. It dictates which places or spaces they go into. It's just joy, joy, joy.
This is so interesting to me because I've been to many brides, I've been to many parties, I've been to many gatherings, and the people who host or the people who attend do not believe that the bride is complete or the event is complete without a bottle of Coke. We're not having a gathering if we don't have Coke.
Exactly. It's a universal drink. It's transcended languages, cultures, everywhere.
Yeah.
You go to Saudi Arabia and everybody knows what you talk about when you ask them for a Coca-Cola. Right? It's this bottle that's gone around the world bringing joy.
Mm.
And there was a question once asked to the Coca-Cola exec, why are you guys still spending so much money on marketing? You're the biggest brand, physical drink brand, you own other brands, and why might you still spend so much money?
Yeah.
Because they say every day is a new kid who's learning about Coca-Cola.
Oh.
Right?
And so, with the way the world is, every day is an opportunity for them to sprinkle joy.
Exactly that.
Yeah.
Exactly that. So that's the thing. I'll bring it to another brand, Discovery Medical Aid.
Yeah.
This one, it took me a while to kind of figure out. But when you look at Discovery's communication, the essence of their brand is to give you access.
Okay.
Access to a better life, right? So it's not about the doctor visits. It's not about the hospitals you're staying in. It's about living a better life, vitality point. It's not about the car insurance and the tow truck drivers that will come to your aid.
Mm.
It's about cashback and petrol into your food. It's giving you access to that.
Mm.
And where I saw it come alive was when Discovery sponsored Justin Bieber. I think it was Justin Bieber's second tour in South Africa.
Okay.
There was a first concert that he came in and the ticket sold out within a matter of hours, right? And so many people did not get tickets to Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
Discovery saw the opportunity, and the second concert, they jumped in. But what they did is they locked in the tickets that Vitality members had first dibs on the tickets.
Mm.
But before Discovery, it got you access to
Justin Bieber,
right? And then access to a great entertainment, world-class entertainment by attending the show and so forth. But that's their communication, is who and what can we give access to our people, right? It's not just that we invite you to a wellness camp. We're going to give you access to dietary
secrets,
give you access to physios and coaches and so forth to help you. So when you're looking at a brand, you got to identify what's the essence of this brand. And then I've got a rule of thumb. And it's not mine. I discovered it. I can't even remember. I think it was a marketing agency that discovered this. But they had this thing that they say, branding is who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And marketing is what you do to validate who you are.
Ooh.
So at Akajo, we believe that we were a sexy brand.
Yeah.
And so we hired people we deemed sexy.
Okay.
Right, to represent the brand.
Yes.
To represent the brand,
yes.
Right? So they embodied this. So everything in our store was to validate who we believed you are.
Mm.
We were a fun, loving brand. In fact, when I talk about essence, Akajo's essence at the peak was The Weeknd. That's what Akajo sold, The Weeknd.
Mm.
The Weeknd on a Monday, The Weeknd on a Tuesday, The Weeknd, it was The Weeknd.
Whoa.
The Weeknd was, we dressed up The Weeknd. We gave you golfers in vibrant colors. We gave you cargo shorts and all the other clothing elements.
Mm-hmm.
We had beautiful girls and beautiful guys in the store. We had bumping music. We had a scent. It was The Weeknd whenever you entered an Akajo store.
Yeah.
That's the essence of the brand. So now we're like, okay, so if we, everything in our store, every touch point, every element must represent what we're about.
Mm.
We're sexy, we're vibrant, and so forth. And all around is everything there.
It's funny you should say that the essence of Discovery is access, because about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I got a call from one of their agents, right? One of their call center agents. And they wanted to sign me up for a life policy. Now, with life policies, you know, you never get to enjoy that money. The people you leave behind are the ones who get the money. But here's a spin to their policy. And I forgot what it's called. They say at a certain age, I think it's 65 or whenever, you get a portion of your life policy. So you're not just throwing money into something that other people get to enjoy. They say, hey, we will give you access to this money at some point while you're still alive. And so when you said that about them, I was just like, oh, they're living up to it.
Exactly.
And I think understanding your essence also helps you. It informs what you create. It informs the product development. It informs the communication in the form of advertising and marketing and all of those things, because you understand where this is coming from and what it's meant to achieve.
Yeah, because your mission now with this essence is, how do I get my people to experience this?
Yeah.
Right? Physically, emotionally, How do I? So every touch point on our website, on every time we do a live event, they have to experience this essence. So it starts becoming your guiding system, for lack of a better word, in terms of how you develop your products, how you develop the experience around your product, right? Because you want everybody to experience this essence.
Do you also believe that essence is a way to weed out people who aren't for your brand? Because when we think about the idea of essence, it's slightly intuitive. So they're just people you vibe with and people you just like, no, not for me. So do you think it's also a way to weed out and pull out the people that are for you and those that aren't?
Yes, definitely. And I learned this in my retail space, because we hire a team according. So the Platinum Group hired people according to the personalities for each brand, right? So the brands under the Platinum Group were Akajo, which is Jocks and Cheerleaders.
Yeah.
There was a brand called Vertigo, which are more artistic guys who are music inclined, but just very creative folks. We had Hilton Wiener, which was like the top billing couple that traveled the world and were, you know, lived a certain lifestyle. There was Jenny Button, which was like a Sex in the City type of personality, type of girl, career-driven woman. And you then had a brand that was born from Hilton Wiener, which was the urban brand.
Yeah.
And I think if I remember the name, Urban by Hilton Wiener. The urban brand was a younger version of Hilton Wiener. So it was like almost like an architect, or they were, the colors were gray and very soft kind of colors. They were also, I mean, we were all, you know, putting this company called the Platinum Group, we were all kind of intelligent and so forth, but it's the way we expressed ourselves.
Yeah.
You knew when Akajo people walked into the room. They were loud. You just knew.
I mean, The Weeknd, you're loud.
Exactly.
There are no inhibitions.
Just, you know, we wanted people to know we're in the mix now.
Yeah.
And Urban, which were also just like a younger version, or were just like young as Akajo, were much more quiet, much more reserved, also in their communication, in the way they move.
Yeah.
Right? In the way they group themselves. They still like laughing and stuff, but just didn't laugh as loud as Akajo. So when it came to recruiting, Akajo developed a system where we'll ask a series of questions. And from that, and looking at the answers you gave, we knew which brand you best fitted you. And it was important to place you in that brand, because your default setting is to act in this manner.
Yes.
And if we put an active girl person in Urban, they'll feel stifled.
Yeah.
And same thing with the Urban person, put them in active girl. They'll be like, this is just ridiculous, like a circus here, right? And so it was important, because it meant that these people naturally embody the spirit of the brand and would then carry. And then when it came to like getting buy-in in terms of activities we're going to do in the store and stuff, it was natural for Akajo folks to accept what we're doing. And natural for Urban folks to accept what the Urban store was doing, because it was part of them, right? And because we want to get everybody on board into our brand, but there's the first group of people we get are the ones that are going to become our disciples and tell the whole world
what we're about. Yeah.
If you think of how Apple grew, the first group of, call it Apple disciples, enjoyed and experienced the products and shared their enjoyment with the rest of the world, and took it and take it through.
The early adopters.
Yeah. And the essence attracts the people who naturally resonate with this essence.
Mm.
And through their experience, they bring more and more people into it. They build their way. So even with your internal stock, and that's the first disciples you got to build. Your essence and your style of communicating, style of expressing, must appeal to those people, must be natural for them. You get those, I just need a job, I'll work for you. But you find that somewhere along the line, they start fighting with the brand or fighting with the company.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know.
Their frustration frustrates the entire organization, in fact, and that messes with the culture even.
Exactly.
And you know,
I was going to say, you raise an important point, culture. Because without that internal culture. You can't have the external culture.
No.
Yeah.
No. And I'm so glad you've said this because it segues nicely into what I wanted to ask you next. I also know you're in the world of sports and you talk about fan engagement there, right? And I'm wondering, how does that translate to creative audiences? And essentially, what are creatives missing?
Ooh. So sports, in the world of sports, right?
Yeah.
I believe, and I've got a formula, it's kind of my business secret sauce, on that you can create fans, right? With the storytelling, you can create fans. And there's certain elements that are required within a story to tell, to win fans over.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you look at, I'll give you two kind of scenario.
Okay.
In the South African football fraternity, Orlando Pirates, the three major soccer clubs are Orlando Pirates, Kaizer Chiefs, and Mamelodi Sundowns.
Mm.
Now, what's interesting is Mamelodi Sundowns have been winning trophies left, right, and center. And for the past, I think it's safe to say that the past decade, they might have either equaled or have gotten more trophies than the two Soweto Giants.
Okay.
Right? So any kid in South Africa born in that space have only seen TV wise Mamelodi Sundowns as the dominant force in South African football.
Mm-hmm.
Yet the supporter base of Kaizer Chiefs and Orlando Pirates dwarfs Mamelodi Sundowns supporter base. So how is that possible? You got the most victorious team in football history, mm-hmm. club football history in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Dominating, I think they've won 8 straight Premier League titles.
Yeah.
Yet their fan base is still small compared to the Soweto Giant clubs.
Mm.
And so when you look at it closer, the story that Kaizer Chiefs and Orlando Pirates tell, right, is based off the community that they come from.
For sure.
So that's the first thing that they do. They let you know where they come from.
Mm-hmm.
They are a Soweto club. Kaizer Chiefs doesn't have a Soweto suburbs or neighborhood in their name,
no.
But they always make reference to that we are a Soweto club,
mm-hmm.
right? And with the story of how this club or these clubs were built, where they come from, the star players.
Yes.
I never watched Jomo Sono play for Orlando Pirates, but I know the story of Jomo Sono at his wedding, hearing that his beloved Pirates were gold down, and he begged his wife to let him go play. He went, played, scored a goal and assisted for the second goal, came back and enjoyed the rest of his wedding.
Yeah.
All right? They tell you the story, this history with this club.
Mm.
And so this story gets passed on from generation to generation, and kids are born into the supporter base of Orlando Pirates.
Yeah.
Some of the kids taken out of them.
For
right?
sure.
For sure, right? And they show up within their communities, where they do activations there, or at the very least play a soccer match in the Orlando Pirates and Kaizer Chiefs play their matches in Soweto.
Mm.
Mamelodi Sundowns, on the other hand, have got this township, and I learned it this week that the name Mamelodi came because of the place was a vibrant place with music and stuff. So it was a place of melody.
Melody.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Right? Place of melody was a vibrant. In fact, a friend of mine was telling me that the idea of Vilakazi Street came from a similar street in Mamelodi. There was like a place, a strip full of jazz clubs and so forth. Restaurants. It's just that obviously Soweto guys amplified it.
Yeah.
But so you've got this history in Mamelodi. And Sundowns, who are supposed to be, call it the warriors or the embodiment of this place of melodies.
Mm.
And if you think about it, Sundowns' nickname are known as the Brazilian because of the color schemes
that
match the Brazilian football team.
Mm.
But yet Brazilians, they've described their football as dancing the samba, right? Now, if you hail from a place of melody, your rhythm of football is almost like a dance, right?
Yeah.
But they don't tell that story. They don't connect with that.
No.
They instead they play in Pretoria and train in Kempton Park.
Mm.
So when do the people of Mamelodi where do they build their connection with this team? Right? And so when it comes to creating a fan or building a strength with an audience, you have to tell the story and you have to bring that story to the audience and make them part of the story. Make them part of the story, that they believe, that they understand the intricacies, the nuances of this team or of this brand. It represents us, right? Apple comes there, Steve Jobs and he's come back to Apple. They put together this ad and they say, we are for those who think different. And immediately a lot of people identify with that.
For sure. And if you're a rebel, Apple is your brand.
You're against the grain. And we're the brand that is about those who go against the grain. Because those are the ones who change the world. And everybody change the world. And so they resonate with the Apple story. And Apple continuously produces the brand, produces the product, produces the experience for those rebels. And now I remember there was a girl that I knew, and it was almost like a prerequisite for her that whoever her romantic interest is must have an affinity for Apple, because she has an affinity for
Yes.
She was almost like, I don't respect or I don't.
Exactly. For her, it spoke to her values.
Exactly. She embodied the Apple so much that it dictated who her love interest should be.
And it's fair. It makes sense.
If I want to share my image with them, I say, hey, what's that thing that they call it where you're sharing it? It's
AirPlay.
AirPlay.
Yeah.
And you say, no, I've got an Android. Oh, she looks
you mean for AirDrop, right? It's like AirDrop.
AirDrop. She looks at you sideways because you can't AirDrop. Why is it in my life?
Yes. So I can't even AirDrop my ideas to you because you just won't get it.
Exactly. Right? So the creating the fan is like, here's our story, and we want you to be a part of it.
Yeah.
And you come along on the journey of telling of us telling and expressing the story. Right? So from a creative point of view, what's your story and how have you, and which community are you representing? It's very important. It's very important. I know I'm passionate about sport, but which community am I speaking to? Without a community, without an audience, I can't spread my story. If it's not for people, if it's just for myself, it's going to be a problem.
I'm thinking so much about my own brand. Sorry, I'm quiet, and it's because I'm really pensive. I'm thinking about how I'm representing myself on my platforms and what stories I'm sharing, and to who. Because 100%, you can say whatever you want to say. You can share a story, but it needs to resonate with the people you're actually speaking to. Otherwise, it's lost in translation. What do you believe?
No.
Never. And speaking of stories, what do you, from your experience, what do you believe is the most undervalued part of people's stories? What is it that they don't share that they actually should be sharing?
So I think that, you know, as humans, we are wired to always want a happy ending. And we love the, hence kind of the name of my agency, the hero story.
Yes.
Right? And the hero story is not just all things rosy. It's the struggle. And why I resonate so much with the sports industry and entertainment industry is the journey of becoming an athlete, a professional athlete, or becoming a world-class entertainer is wrapped in the story of overcoming struggles and challenges. It starts from a place of a person like you can't be achieving such great, but yet you step up anyway. So there's faith woven in that story, and rising up and showing up, and disappointment and struggle and doubts and fears, and yet there's a victory at the end. It's a hero story that leads embodies a brand story or a sports team story. It's that overcoming, right? If you look at some famous football teams like Manchester United, Manchester United's biggest jump in popularity happened in the history of during the time when they had their biggest strategy. I'm just missing that word. In their biggest pain what they suffered when coming back from a European match, their golden team had a plane crash. And if I'm not mistaken, only out of a squad of 40-odd people, two people survive.
Oh, geez.
And for a sports team, which meant that this you all of a sudden had to rebuild the team from scratch.
Yeah.
Right? And they did, and they won.
Mm.
Right? The pain of that, I think it was called the Munich disaster or something. Mm. The pain of losing your stars that were going to become great stars and rebuilding. The city rallied around this team, and the team, the club, rebuilt itself and achieved European glory. This that of coming, this pain hit, and people died, and there was how are we ever going to reach that greatness? We were robbed of potential greatness, but yet they rebuilt and came up again, right? And even with like Michael Jordan, when they tell you story, is that he was cut at high school basketball. The coach said, you're not going to make it. And he came back to show him, no, I'm going to make it. Yeah. Rise up to the occasion and so forth. Every great hero has had the story of heartache. So I find that a lot of people don't tell the heartache story.
If you are seeing me right now, my hand is up. I'm a lot of people. It's me. It's me, Eddie. You're talking to me about me.
and that's where you're showing your strength, your resilience, because you connect with so much people who you share the moments when you had your doubts. The moments where you're like, this, I'm not gonna make it. I don't know. The moments where you woke up in bed and you say, you know what, today I'm just gonna stay in bed because I don't have it in me. And then you somehow find a way to get up. Try again and try again and try again and try again until you arrive. So you share those parts of the stories, and that's where we win the hearts, because so many people relate to that.
Yeah.
You don't just want inspirational figures because we've gotten to the top of the mountain. Mm-mm. What was happening in the valley? That's where the steel was made. That's where the muscle was strengthened. You know, a muscle can't grow until it faces resistance.
Yeah.
You can't have a piece of jewelry until the gold has gone through the fire. Right? It's been forged in the fire. Mm. Right? So that's the part of the story we need to share. We need to share of how we got up after falling down seven times. What made you believe, having experienced so much no's, what made you believe that you can get up?
Mm.
I mean, we're fortunate enough with social media to start hearing the stories of some of the great brands that are around us.
There's
a couple of guys. So, for example, the writer, the author who created Harry Potter, how many no's did she experience?
J.K. Rowling.
Before she released her first book.
Yeah.
What would make her believe that they've said no to you, but yet you're still writing a book?
Mm.
You're not going out on the streets and trying to sell it. You're still writing a book. People are telling you, no.
You're still typing away. Are you crazy?
Why are you doing that? Yeah. Right? I'm trying to think of another one. There's a car manufacturer. In fact, there's some of the famous brands in car manufacture, like your Ferrari, your Lamborghini, Zonda. Ferrari, I think Enzo Ferrari was trying to build something for another brand and was rejected. And then he created his own brand. And that brand that he was trying to sell to was an established brand. But yet, they rejected him. But he said, okay, it's fine. I'll do it myself.
Yeah.
And he did it. And this brand has lost it how many years? And it's not the whole world has driven a Ferrari, but we're all just thrilled by the brand Ferrari.
Yes.
Lamborghini had approached Ferrari to express to him like a better way of designing a car or the engine of a car. Enzo Ferrari rejected Mr. Lamborghini. Mr. Lamborghini says, it's fine, I'll do it myself.
Yeah.
And he did the same thing. There's another car brand called Zonda. Zonda, he had a specific, I'm trying to remember his idea, and I think it was for Ferrari or Lamborghini, I can't remember, either one of the two. And he was like a designer, he was a chief designer. And they said, no, they rejected his idea. I said, fine, I'll do it myself.
Mm.
And he built a brand that rivaled those two. Bill Gates was rejected by IBM.
Yeah.
He was rejected by IBM, but he got
Oprah Winfrey.
Oprah Winfrey was said no, was fired.
Yeah.
was fired. Yeah. They said, you can't be a presenter. Go.
Yeah. You don't have the face. You don't have the voice.
Nothing. Yeah. You don't have the body.
Yo.
But yet she got up. And look at the brand. She's cool. She has her own network.
Yeah.
Tyler Perry was writing a story in his car, homeless. Mm. In his car, writing stories, plays. Homeless. And this is a man who came from a toxic environment where he watched his mother be abused and so forth. Mm. But yet he had this thing and he went and he continued to write. He's homeless. Mm. He's not sleeping in four walls. He's in his car writing a story. At that point you're like, man, maybe I should just be a street sweeper, as long as I'm getting money.
Mm.
But no, bigger. And that's where when they share those parts of their stories, that's where they win us over. That's where we're like, wow. It makes the victory even more sweeter.
Mm.
You know? And so it's that part of the story we have to share. That's the part of the story we have to document and say, man, on Monday, the 16th of June, I was not ready for this week. I hated this week. Mm. I did my life. I was questioning myself. But I showed up on Tuesday. And I showed up on Wednesday. And I showed up and I showed up and I showed up.
You know what? It's fine. It's okay. Because you came on here, you read me for filth. I get it. It's okay. I will share the gory parts of my story. And you're right. You're right, man. Because those are the things that really connect us, right? We are surrounded by so much content that is curated to show highlights that it isolates us. We tend to feel like what we're doing is wrong. We're never going to make it. But when somebody says, yo, you see me smiling today, you've got no idea what it took to get the smile on my face. And those are the things that actually get us up and, this is what I can do as well. And I think we'd be doing this conversation such an injustice if we didn't touch on pricing, especially where creatives are concerned. So I want to hear from you. What's the biggest mistake you see creatives making when pricing their work, and how can they confidently fix that?
Oh, man. I think before you get to price, you must have developed a product, a service that actually gives value to your customer, your client.
Yeah.
And once you do that, the price is almost acceptable, very accepted by the client. And it starts like, I remember there's this guy that I started following. His name is Myron Goldman.
Oh, yes, I know him, Myron.
You know Myron, right?
Yeah.
And he says, a lot of us get it wrong that we think that we're selling for people.
Mm.
Right, we're helping them by selling to them. That no. We want to sell because it's going to add value to your life.
And I'm going to add a little bit of a side note here. I don't know, you can tell me what you think of this, right? So I see a lot of entrepreneurs and business owners, when somebody buys, oh, thank you for your support. And I'm like, they're not supporting you, they're supporting themselves.
Exactly.
This is for them. It's not for you and your kitty. So, yeah, continue.
Exactly. And so the concept of really, am I adding value?
Mm.
Once you get that, and once you see the value that you bring and you are delivering value, you never have to worry about getting customers and clients.
It becomes material.
And those who say that you can't afford you are the ones that at this point in time you shouldn't be servicing.
Ooh.
Right.
Oof.
And I did this this trick where I used AI to give me a price. So I was doing something that I'd never done before.
Mm-hmm.
And I used AI to give me what should be my price.
Yeah.
This is who I am. This is the industry I play in.
Mm-hmm.
What should be my price per hour? And AI came back and gave me a price. And I thought, that's quite steep. A lot. I'm not just so I said to the AI, I said, how would you defend when they ask, why am I charging this price?
Mm.
And the AI gave me a reason. And he said, and in the essence, it comes down that you are paying for all my years of research to get this point.
All the failures. And me having to get up. Yeah.
So I've perfected this system, and I'm confident that I can deliver this to you. It will add value. This is why I'm charging you this price.
Luckily for me, because they truly believed in the value that I was bringing, they never questioned the price.
Yeah.
Right? So for me, it really comes down in terms of what value am I bringing to the table. And once I've established that this is valuable, then once I price it, most of them will be like, I'm paying it.
Mm.
It's like when I listen, like, for example, Myra Goldman, and he gives a price on his speaking thing, I don't say, oh, he's too expensive.
Yeah.
I'm like, I need to save up and get the money so I can experience Myra Goldman.
Because you know what's on the other end.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So once you have value, price is irrelevant.
Mm.
No. It's the value because even, I'll give you a simple explanation. So
yeah.
I had to get sponsors for a sports and facilities conference.
Mm.
And in the audience of that conference was made up of stadium managers, venue facilitators, managers, and so forth. I approached two companies and I gave them the price and so forth. They accepted the price because they did the math. The math was, if we had to try and get to speak to all these people, it was going to cost us more than what this opportunity is allowing us. We're going to pay X amount and be at this conference for 3 days with this audience. That's 3 days for them to know who we are, that we exist, know what we're about, and know how we can help them.
Mm.
That's 3 days. If we didn't have this conference,
I wouldn't have these people.
Exactly. Call and hope we get time in their diary and they might have to fly. So this works out because it is valuable.
Mm.
It is the value that you bring is higher than the money I'm willing to spend.
Mm.
As soon as I feel that the value is less than the money,
it's not happening. It's not happening. Yeah.
So you work on your value and your prices is irrelevant. Yeah.
If you could lead a movement of African creative entrepreneurs, what's the first lesson you teach them?
Oof. I was actually thinking about it yesterday in terms of like, so I discovered I had a passion for sports. So when I found out that I had this thing called marketing within me, I said, what kind of marketing would I be doing? I said, oh, I love sports. And I mistook that you should build a business on your passion. But you build your business on your gift, and your gift is what you're good at.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm good at strategy.
Mm.
So I should be building my business on strategy. Because strategy is what gives value to the audience. That's how I give value. So my first lesson to them is, you've got to solve a problem for other people.
Yeah.
The more other people's problem you solve, the bigger your reward.
Mm.
So if we look at the biggest companies and the richest men in the world, are the men that solve the biggest problem. They solve the problems for the biggest amount of
people. Yep.
Amazon solving problems for the end user, whoever's buying a book or buying a product, but also solving the problem for those who are trying to get their products to a market.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they've created a platform and system where all these people are having their problems solved.
Yeah.
How to reach a market, how to get this particular product. Elon Musk and Tesla, the electric vehicle, it's an alternative to a internal combustion engine.
Mm-hmm.
It's an alternative to, because previously the electric cars that were coming out were ugly cars, they weren't as powerful, they didn't have a lot of energy. And he came and he revolutionized it.
Yeah.
He gave us batteries that make the car travel further. He gave us design that looked great. And it became a car that rivaled in terms of design next to a Mercedes and a BMW and so forth. He solved the problem for a bigger number of people.
Mm.
He's selling product. It solves a problem for a big number of people. But the essence of it is rooted in solving a problem.
Mm.
In bringing value to a market. So the first thing I'd say, what problem does your service or product solve?
Yeah.
And for who? And once you know that, then you know if it's good and if it's a good enough problem to be solved. If it's a, I mean, then you also enter the Steve Jobs space where the iPhone or the iPod was not a problem. We knew it was a problem, but once the solution was made evident to us, we couldn't go back.
Yeah. No. Ever.
But, we had Walkmans. We had CD Walkman.
Yeah.
Right. We had a CD Walkman, and he says, "Here's a iPod," and he didn't say it's a slick what? He said it's 1,000 song on one.
Yes.
CD at best could give you 30, 40
yeah,
songs.
Yeah.
But now he says 1,000 songs
in your pocket.
In your pocket.
Can you believe that?
You're like, okay, I didn't know it was a problem, but I assure you, I would love 1,000 songs at a touch of a button.
Yeah.
And we jumped on it. Mm. BlackBerry existed, and so we knew about a smartphone.
Yeah.
Now, the issue was that if a button broke on a BlackBerry keyboard, you had to replace the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The phone became almost useless if you couldn't press the send button on your keyboard.
Yeah.
Let's take away these. Let's have applications. So if the application is not working well, it's fine. Delete it and put on another application.
Mm.
Your phone was not rendered useless because the button broke.
Yeah.
Right? And then he said, let's make it touchscreen.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make it seamless. And once we knew about it, we didn't know it was a problem, but once we knew about it, we weren't happy with what BlackBerry was.
Yeah.
You know? So, but it's always come down, my thing would be, first things first, what problem do you solve and for?
For who?
For who? I might have a strong passion for sports, but I'm at the service of the sports industry.
Mm.
I'm for its betterment before my betterment, right? And if I do a good enough job, I get rewarded anyway.
Yeah.
But I'm for other. It's the guys who run businesses. It goes beyond them.
Mm.
It goes for the community that they serve, the audiences they speak to. That's who they serve. So what problem do you solve and for
who?
That's how I would start. Yeah.
Lastly, Mr. Strategist, what's the first strategic move someone listening to this right now can do to begin unlocking creative success?
Ooh. So I think for me, I guess it comes down to the same thing, to be honest. I always want to know what's happening in the industry that I'm playing in, right? So I would have, I haven't done it in a while, but my go-to thing was I needed to read 2 articles a day on my industry. And if I could fit in more, great.
Mm-hmm.
And there might be interesting other stuff and so forth. But the aim was whenever, and I learned this from one of my former bosses who mentored me just by me watching him.
Yeah.
He's a gentleman by the name of Tebe Kalafeng.
Oh, okay.
Dr. Tebe Kalafeng.
Yeah.
Because he got his honorary doctor.
Yep.
And he enters a room. And I remember I asked him, you know, how do you, I think I asked him just in the process of how he answers clients and their queries and so forth. He says, I am the expert in the room.
Mm.
If I wasn't the expert, the client wouldn't ask me to be.
Yeah.
Now it sounds arrogant wise, but the meat behind it is that he prepares to be the expert.
He has the responsibility.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's his duty.
Yeah.
It's his duty to prepare, to know, to have experimented, to have got the results of the experiment, so that when he sits in front of the client, he is coming from a place of knowledge and practical experience and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
That the client, because if a client comes here and says, Eddie, what should our brand strategy be? They're coming to me not because, you know, they're bored and there's nobody else.
Because they're lazy to think, yeah.
They come because they see me as an expert, someone who can guide them in building their brand strategy. And so whatever you're doing in your space, be the expert in it.
Mm.
Find a way of being an expert in it. And it's not that being an expert it's not reliant on the external audience telling you you're an expert.
Mm.
It's you preparing like an expert.
Mm.
I always use this analogy. When does I'll give you an example of someone who's just achieved, Coco Gauff, who just won Roland Garros.
Yes.
When was she a winner? When was she a champion? When she lifted the trophy
when she showed up every day and practiced and showed up every match and played like
every
a champion.
Every day, mate.
Every day. Because, I mean, she even shared her, how she wrote down her goals.
Yes,
her
yes. I saw that, yeah.
It started back then because she didn't just go to train for the sake of going to training. She was training for Roland Garros already there to win.
Yeah, in her mind, that's who she was.
That's what,
she was a champion. Yeah.
She was a champion. So even in that, and a friend of mine, because I never watched the match from beginning to end, but a friend of mine did. And he said, even when she was down, right, to her opponent, she didn't lose her cool. She wasn't worried because she was a champion. And she's like, I will respond like a champion.
Yeah.
And a champion calm. And she rallied herself, picked herself up, and won the match.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So when are you when am I a brand strategist? When my client tells me I'm a brand strategist or when I'm showing up every day like a brand strategist? Right? So I read the articles. I read and I experiment. I study different ways of brand communication and so forth. So that when my client calls me in the room, there's an expert in front of them. I've read more. I've studied more.
Yeah.
I've looked and investigated more. So when they come into the room, I'm an expert in that space. So for me, the first thing is right now, strategic move is be the expert.
You know what?
Yeah.
I was not meant to have this conversation with you. Someone else was going to be filling in for me. And I was just like, there is absolutely no way. And this is not even coming from a pompous place, right? It's coming from a place of, this is my show. I am very intentional about how I want people to learn and walk away from these conversations having. And so not that I'm undermining what other people would do, but for me, the point of this conversation is to make sure that whoever hears this has something to do with what they've heard. I don't know if somebody else will come on here with that same intention. In the time that I'm doing the show, my people know we're not just chatting, we're getting tools. And so the idea of this conversation being had by somebody else, I was just like, no, we're going to find a way because my people deserve a certain level of conversation, a certain level of curiosity from me, a certain level of research that I even bring to these spaces so that the outcome is met. And so when I say this is my show, it's not even from a place of, yeah, nobody does it better than me, but actually I do it this way so that it is the best outcome for the other person on the other end. And even the people I'm having conversations with, it's not cookie cutter. They always say, oh no, I've never had such a conversation before. And I'm just like, there's intention.
True.
Very
exactly.
Intentional because I know what I want to achieve. And that wraps up our conversation. And I really just want to thank you because you've given us something very rare in this conversation. And what that is a map for creative spark to commercial clarity. I think a lot of creatives fall along the wayside because they didn't have a map. They just showed up as the people who've got the gift, as the people who've got the talent, and there really wasn't a strategy around it. And so all the creatives listening, I really just want to say embrace strategy because it will not sacrifice your artistry. In fact, it enhances your artistry. It makes sure that it's sustainable and it outlives even you. And on the days that you cannot show up actively, the strategy makes up for you not being there physically because there's longevity, right? It's thought out. It's not just one touch point. It's multiple things coming together for the outcome. And I also just want to say for the creators as well, position your story as your strongest asset and not just the nice parts, Mbumi.
No, all of it.
Exactly. And I also just want to end off by saying it's a good idea. It's the grandest idea to build a business around your brilliance, not just your work. I was really moved by saying, what is the thing you're great at? Because that is what you commercialize. And with that, you understand you can fit into so many spaces because it is the skill. It is not a certain industry. It is not a certain, it's a skill, the one that is transferable and you can carry everywhere that you go. And so I hope with this, the era of the starving artist ended yesterday and the era of the thriving creative entrepreneur begins from this conversation onwards. Thank you so much, Eddie. This was amazing.
Thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed having this chat. Thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers. Thank you for me.
Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.